Blog Talk Radio.
Well, greetings. Yes, welcome to a fantastic show, another show on conscious parenting and personal growth. This is part 10. How about that? Part 10. I am Nazim Rashid. Yes, I was going to say the host. Well, I guess I'm that too. I'm also conducting this series, this nice talk series on this fantastic, needed topic, conscious parenting and personal growth. And like I always say, it's very important for those who have not heard the first 10 installments to please go into the archives and hear them and save them on your own hard drive so you can hear them at any time you like by going to blogtalkradio.com/Imam Alfred. Again, blogtalkradio.com/Imam Alfred. All right, okay, very good. And the call in number is 805-727-7013. All right, I'm the author of Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. And this series is based on this book. And so what I'm doing on this and the other series is basically reading from the various personal growth topics and applying them to the topic at hand. All right, the first series was I did some time ago was on addictions and recovery. Oh, yes, very, very important. And the second one was on marriages. Very, very important. Now, this one is on conscious parenting and personal growth. Very, very important. Very, very important to understand. You know, as a parent, you have to know what you're doing. And most of us, like my mother, you know, she said, well, it was on-the-job training, you know, learn as I went. That's not good for the child. If you don't know, ask somebody. You see, there are books, but, you know, you got to watch some of these books. You know, you have to talk to someone with sense. So I always say talk to someone who spent time down south in the old days, you know, and those great grandmothers. Ask them, you see. Yeah, for sure. They know. They know for sure. You know, but find out some kind of way or another. Don't just go along with who knows what. Find out how to take care of these little ones. All right? Very important. Not just physically, but emotionally and spiritually also. All right? And remember, kids, be what they see, not what you tell them, not what they hear. Words are notation, the presentation, okay? Because an infant, they don't understand your words anyway. They sense your spirit. That's very important. Yeah, very important. Very important to understand that. And right now, our subtopic is today is addictions and codependency and unhealthy attachments. And we're going to talk about that for a while. And you'll see the relevance for sure, for sure. We've got to, you know, got to come clean. We've got to come present with our youth and with ourselves. Remember, this is twofold. Personal growth also. Even if you are not a parent, this is very important. Addictions and codependency in order to live a happy, productive, clean life. You have to understand addictions and codependency. A lot of times codependency happens unconsciously. You do what you're programmed to do from childhood. So we're going to talk about that also. Everything is connected to everything. All right? Very important to understand that. Okay. All right. Oh, by the way, my website, cloudsofabundance.com. Cloudsofabundance.com. Again, cloudsofabundance.com. And you can email me at nrbookclub@gmail.com. nrbookclub@gmail.com. All right? Okay, very important. So last time we met on the ninth installment, we were talking about codependency. And I always like to go back a little bit and recap a little bit, and we can go on, kind of go on from there, okay? Very important, codependency. Unfortunately, what we see repeatedly on TV and in our communities are the results of unhealthy attachments, which many times started with unhealthy attachments at home. Yeah, personally, I've had many incidents as a teacher where the parent was obviously responsible for the child's behavior and defending their misbehavior. Okay? Codependency is another form of unhealthy attachments. A lot of times parents have unhealthy attachments with their children. Oh man, it's really something. Really something. You don't own that little one. You're only there. All right, given a job by God to manage that child, to model and mentor for that child, and prepare that child to live an independent, happy, healthy life. You don't own it. You don't possess it. Okay? And you shouldn't need that child for your own unmet needs. Yeah, I said that. Okay, let's move on here. All right, the original concept of codependency was developed to acknowledge the responses and behaviors people develop from living with an alcoholic or a substance abuser. Over the years, codependency has expanded into a definition which describes a dysfunctional pattern of living and problem solving developed during childhood by family rules. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, very important. Everybody got that? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Another definition of codependency is, quote, a set of maladaptive compulsive behaviors learned by family members in order to survive in a family which is experiencing great emotional pain and stress, end quote. Now, if a person is maladaptive, they are displaying an inability to develop their behaviors which get their needs met. They're displaying an inability to develop behaviors which gets their needs met. As a children, they don't know how to get their needs met. They don't know. All they know is stress in the environment. You know, and they don't know how to do it. They act out, cry, tantrums. They don't know. Called maladaptive. Now, codependents are dependent on someone else's problems, hence the name co-dependent. As in cooperating or connected, codependents have that tendency to get involved in relationships with people who are unreliable, emotionally unavailable, and needy. Okay? Now, if a man is alcoholic, he needs someone who is going to support him in his alcoholism. Okay? If he can't stand up, he needs someone there to hold him up and cover up his faults. She, being the codependent or enabler, needs to have someone who is going to protect her and give her the image of a strong husband. Remember, the image of a strong husband. This quote-unquote good husband providing and maintaining the household and is not going to expect her to be strong within and independent. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He will also tell her that he loves her occasionally. Mm-hmm. Her self-esteem and self-image are very low. So she pretends to feel good in this made-up image of a marriage. That projection is her personal esteem that she is internalizing. She doesn't know how to get her real needs met. So she lives a life of pretense with a man who also has self-esteem issues. Isn't that something? Together, they are happier, so it seems. Don't ask him to lead a life of sobriety, moral behavior, healthy thinking and living. And don't ask her to develop her own self-esteem and self-image, honor her own spirit within, honor her own spirituality and independence. Oh, no. If they did that, then they would have to really look at themselves. And they can't do that. Mm-mm. No. See, that would take a great deal of work and acceptance of their higher self. Denial. Oof. Big one. Denial is more convenient. Ooh, I see it all the time. After all, it is what they are used to doing. It is an acceptable pattern of behavior. This pattern was probably learned from their parents. Wounded children come from wounded parents. Mm. Remember, whatever the parents exhibit becomes acceptable in the child's mind. Hear this, acceptable in the child's mind. It may be drug use, abuse, profanity, disrespect of self and others, general disobedience, smoking, drinking, lacking of family values, non-support behaviors, and of course, codependency. On one level, the child would not like certain negative behaviors such as fighting and other forms of abuse. But on the subconscious level, the mind is recording what is acceptable and what is stored for future use. Yeah, I'm going to give you a quote by this guy named Robert Burney, expert in this area. I always love to quote other experts, gives credibility to what I'm saying, and I always like to, you know, give a shout out to those who also know. He says, quote, codependence is an emotional defense system that is set up to protect the wounded inner child within us from the shame of being exposed as unlovable and unworthy, as stupid and weak, as a loser and failure, as whatever it was that we got the message was the worst thing to be. We were taught to evaluate whatever we had worth in comparison to others. Smarter than, prettier than, faster than, richer than, more successful than, thinner than, stronger than, etc., end quote. Isn't that something? You see, in this kind of mindset, we learn to be judgmental of others because that is easier than looking at our own internal deficits. Please hear this. Being right was very important for us and the way that we found worth. This is why counselors have posed this question to quarreling couples. Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Good question, huh? Do you remember those old bullies who were so sensitive that they felt bothered, angry, or even threatened by someone looking strangely at them or giving them the evil eye? Innocent victim might have demonstrated a so-called distasteful body language toward them. This is a clear sign of a type of codependency problem. They feel that either they, the supposed threatening one, are right, and they are the losers, which confirms what their parents have repeatedly said, or they are wrong, in which case justifies an attack to prove they are right. For the classic codependent, they seem to have a radar set up to draw in just the ones who will push their buttons, the ones who will be the worst possible mates, the ones who will be unavailable, unloving, abusive, and ones to bring out the worst in them. As long as you are reacting unconsciously to the past, and you are, when you pick these negative people as your mates, then you will blame and argue about who is right and who is wrong. We become codependent through living in families with rules that hinder development to some degree. The family system has been developed in response to problems such as alcoholism, mental illness, controlling or domineering, father or mother, absentee parents, and violence. See, there are general rules that are implied and accepted when though no one actually sat the family down and issued out written rules of engagement. Remember, whatever the parents established by the consistent behavior becomes the accepted family norm. In one of Robert Burney's articles on codependency, he has listed family rules that may probably cause codependency. All right, here we go. Family rules. It's not okay to talk about problems. Feelings should not be expressed openly. Keep feelings to yourself. Remember, these are rules in the family. Communications are best if indirect. One person acts as a messenger between two others. Be strong. Men don't cry. Be good, right, and perfect. Ooh, P word. Make us proud beyond realistic expectations. Do as I say, not as I do. It's not okay to play or be playful. Don't rock the boat. All right? I'm adding a few more rules to the list. Children are to be seen and not heard. I heard that one. Children are to be seen and not heard. All right. Girls are to be cute and quiet, and boys are to be strong, controlling, and not to express emotions. I'm sure some of those rang true with some of y'all, or maybe all of them did. Okay? Now, as a result of accepting these rules, children develop harmful behavior and characteristics. They also have diminished problem-solving skills and immature reactions to situations in adult life. As they mature into adolescence and adulthood, their view of the world and relationships are all influenced by their subconscious and sometimes conscious acceptance of codependency. When the boys witness their dad abusing and berating their mother on a regular basis, they grow up thinking that it is what men are supposed to do with their girlfriends and wives. When girls grow up with codependent mothers who can't stand up for themselves and allows husband to play the dominating role, disrespecting her authority in the house and her as a person, she attracts men into her life who will fit the role of a domineering brute because that is what she knows. It also includes cheating. She sees her mother allowing her father to have other women. Same thing. When fear is the dominant theme in the household, everyone in the household has fear as a dominant emotion and acts from that emotion in one form or another. Now, okay, everybody got that? Okay, now I'm going to paint a family picture here so you can really see what's going on. This is very important. Very, very important, see? Because you wonder, looking at your own parenting style, if you're a parent here, or if you weren't, look out how you were raised. It affects everybody, okay? Because, we're going back to those maladaptive rules, maladaptive behaviors. You did what you could, you didn't know how to get your needs met, okay? Very important, very important. Because a whole lot of wounded people are raising kids, and the kids are now dysfunctional, more so because of the improper approach from the parents. You see? You got to understand it. It's so, so very important. Yeah, I just saw, matter of fact, I was at a family gathering. This boy here has a kid who's 2 years old. And, kid is like, he laughs all the time. Everything's a joke. Everything is a joke, okay? Laughing all the time. So in the child's eyes, the father is another playmate, playing constantly. Here's a kid, 2 years old. No, he can walk on his own. He's always carrying the child. And when he puts the child down, the child is always crying and pulling on the father's shirt to pick him up. And father just picks him up. And mother sits down, doesn't do anything. You see? Yeah, yeah. And your parents know at 2 years old, your child should be able to speak. This child is still saying wah wah, da da. Can't even make a full sentence. You see? If there are toys in another room and a child wants to play with the toys instead of saying, hey, dad, can I get the toys? Or he just points down the hall and pulls on his father's shirt instead of asking clearly. You see? And can't anybody, no one else can touch the child or the child to scream, just wants his father only. Why? Because his father is his big teddy bear. So what's going to happen after a while? The child will embarrass him and cause some problems. See? Very important. Yeah, still changing his diaper, too. Not even potty trained. Real problem. Because this child here, the father never got the right kind of proper nurture when he was a child. You see? And probably never got played with, probably. So what happens, he wants to give to his child what he never received. Play. Okay? All right, let's go back to the family example that I'm going to make up here. Let's see how an example of fear can control one particular family. Paul is the dad. Sarah, the mom. Susie, the firstborn. Roberto, the secondborn. Heather, the thirdborn. Tyrone, the baby. Paul is a functioning alcoholic, which means that he is able to maintain his job of supervisor at the Harmony Steel Factory. That's Paul. Got it? Paul. All right. He has no apparent problems, as he has been there for the past 25 years. He is known there as a responsible boss and coworker, receiving various accolades for being the best worker of the month, on several occasions having the best producing team. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He has been married for 20 years to Sarah. If you ask him about his marriage, he would say that everything is going just fine. Oh, yeah. He does drink his scotch before he starts his day, during lunch, on the way home, and before he goes to sleep, but doesn't consider himself an alcoholic. He wishes that his wife wouldn't complain so much, that she would manage the kids better, and that she would keep the house in better shape. He says to himself that if she didn't complain so much, he wouldn't have to drink so much. He says to himself, oh, well, at least I can go to sleep in a stupor, and tomorrow I can leave this chaos and go back to work where I get my due respect. Now, let's see how Sarah's doing from her perspective, okay? She was conditioned by her mother to be the nice, quiet, neat, clean, and obedient wife. She has always wanted a happy, peaceful home with nice, high-achieving children and a loving husband. She never was taught to honor her inner child, her own desires in life separate from relationships, develop a healthy independence, a high self-esteem and self-image. Oh, no, she wasn't taught any of those things. No. Her ideals all came to her relationship with her husband, and she never imagined herself existing outside of that relationship. Now, Sarah tried her best in keeping her four children clean and disciplined. Paul came home. Her internal inadequacies became all too apparent. She would greet him at the door, but he was never pleased. When she would even passively protest, he would beat her and blame her for his explosive fits of rage. She would tell the kids that their father didn't really mean to be violent, and he really did love everyone, but he had a hard day and at work, and everyone needed to do more around the house to show appreciation of him. When Paul was in the bedroom, passed out for drinking, and friends would call for him, she would say that he is taking a nap. Now, what are the children thinking? Susie, oldest, wants to protect the family name and image and convince the younger ones that she is mommy's helper and goes overboard in helping mom with the idea that we are going to be all right. I will make sure of that. See, Susie becomes the hero. Yeah, as described in a dysfunctional family model by Dr. John Bradshaw. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, he's got my book right now, Reconnected. John Bradshaw. The hero is rigid, controlling, and extremely judgmental of others and secretly with themselves. They are achievers, highly motivated, typical type A personalities. Mm-hmm. And they relish the positive attention they get, but they are cut off from their emotional life. They feel inadequate and insecure inside. Since the hard facts of their childhood are too hurtful, they typically find it easier to pretend that their childhood was fine. So denial is much safer to deal with than truth. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, she excels in school and becomes the prom queen in high school. Yeah. Her relationships are sparse, and when she is in relationships, they become toxic very quickly. She can't figure out why the men she is attracted to are abusive and controlling, or why she stays with them afterwards. She eventually leaves the relationship and concentrates her attention again on her attributes, which are management, glamour positions, and being the best. She likes being visible and impressing others with her abilities. She is turned off in relationships and closes the door on that possibility for a while. She stays in touch with her younger siblings and remains their mentor and guide, assuring them that she will always be there for them. She gives them their suggestions and recommendations for their lives and cautions them in relationships. Mm-hmm. She gives them the impression that she has the inside scoop on how to have a successful relationship. She can be seen as an authority because of her senior status in the family and worldly experience. Mm-hmm. After all, she is fashionable, smart, trendy, successful, cute, sexy, and well-loved. When the curtains are drawn together and the crowd leaves, she is alone in her one-bedroom apartment. As the mirror is staring at her, she wonders about her life. She says to herself, "Here I am at 40, having 4 failed abusive relationships, no babies, no home of my own, and jobs that change every 2 years or so. Where did I go wrong? What's wrong with me? I have to be strong for my younger brothers and sisters. Yeah, they need me. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. My aging mother needs me to be strong, too. I wish that I had more confidence in myself, like the one everyone sees in me and out there in the public, you know? Yeah, I wish that image of me was real. I can't think about that now. I have my family and my job that depends on me to be strong. So, off to bed I go, and into my wonderful dream world where everything is perfect and right. At least, I have my dreams to comfort me and keep me from going insane or becoming an addict like my father." Wow. Whew, that's Susie, okay? Now we got Roberto, the second born and the oldest boy. He had an underlying hatred for his dad, as he saw consistent disrespect for his mom and had an absent male role model for him and his little brother. He fits the dysfunctional role of caretaker. The caretaker is valued for their kind heart and generosity. Mm-hmm. Their self-definition is centered on others, for they do not know how to get their own needs met. They're usually the pushovers, and people see the words doormat on their forehead. This is why they get taken advantage of in peer and intimate relationships. Since their self-worth, esteem, and image are quite low, they compensate by helping others in order to feel good about themselves. Many times, this helping becomes extreme, which results in being taken advantage of in the way of scams and controlling girlfriends. Yeah. His father told him that he needs to be the man around the house and not let his brothers and sisters get out of line. Since he had no coaching in this regard, no father and son sessions, no healthy modeling of any sort, he internalized a feeling of inadequacy. Yeah, naturally. This feeling manifested itself on many occasions. Around the house, he dropped and broke things. He would daydream in class a lot and drop his papers, bringing on ridicule from his classmates. His grades were at a C-plus level and received berating comments from his father about his report card. He attracted girlfriends who were aggressive and strong-willed. He had a habit of being attracted to girls who exhibited some kind of need he thought he could fill. Mm-hmm. He attracted the needy, destitute, and controlling ones. In his subconscious or conscious mind, he thought that he could influence them to change for the better by listening to them and showing them that he is compassionate, empathic, and sincerely wanting the best for them. One girlfriend told him that he was going to be her boyfriend, whether he liked it or not. He just said, "Well, okay." He had a knack for fixing cars. But when he received compliments, he would shrug his shoulders and say, "Well, this was nothing. I just fiddled around and didn't got it to work." So-called friends had him work on their cars and found excuses for not paying him the agreed-upon amount. See, Roberto wound up getting married in his mid-20s to a girl who is the controlling figure in the relationship. Yeah, of course. He worked at an auto mechanic shop, and she worked as a school principal. They had three children who are now conditioned by what they saw in their parents. Yeah, how they interacted with one another, what the rules of engagement were, what the accepted standards were, how they're going to act themselves as a result of their conditioning. Think about it. That's what the children saw in the household, okay? Now, Roberto, he became an alcoholic. Never aspiring to be more than a car mechanic, his wife dominated his life and abused him emotionally. And the beat goes on. Anybody know anybody like that? Yeah, yeah, important. Yep, now Heather, she's the scapegoat in family. In dysfunctional families, someone needs to be the scapegoat to make everyone else feel a bit better about the present maladies. So when someone needed to blame somebody, Heather's image would always come up. Yeah, would always come up. Mm-hmm. Yep. She was the most vocal in the family, not holding back her tongue when she witnessed wrong on anybody's part. Of course, family members not wanting to face the many awful truths did not want to hear Heather's mouth. So she was an easy one to place blame on. Mm-hmm. Heather was a frail one in the family and an easy target for blame. She was naive, had an aggressive personality, and seemed to get in trouble more than anyone else. She was responsible for many mishaps in the family, but not the many ones that she got blamed for. She carried this stigma into high school, getting blamed for others' mistakes and getting ridiculed for being the klutz and the anemic one. See, this, along with having a rather brash mouth, didn't make her a favorite pick around school. See, having a very low self-esteem, as many of us have, many of y'all have, she decides to be the humorist and use humor as a smokescreen for her depressing feelings. Because of her seemingly bubbly personality and witty nature, she had no problem attracting boys. Right? Now, remember when I first started to talk about this boy, actually a nephew of mine who was always clowning around, right? And his 2-year-old son sees him as a big teddy bear, not taking him seriously. Remember that? Here you go right here. The seemingly bubbling personality and witty nature, okay, is a smokescreen for depressed feelings. All right? Okay, very good. Like I always said, if you want to chime in on the call, just hit number one on your telephone, and I'll bring you in on the conversation. We're talking about codependency and addictions as it relates to conscious parenting and personal growth. We have someone on the air now, 347. You're now on the air, 347.
Hey there.
You're now on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Fantastic. How are you doing?
Hello? Hey,
yes,
I'm okay.
How are you doing?
My name is Hotep. I'm good. I just caught the last minute of the show, and I think what you're describing is people, whether children or adults, that use humor to deflect from their emotional state, and often that emotional state is not necessarily caused by them, but by parents or environment. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah, that was a part, yeah, I was focusing on it, exactly, for sure. That's part of the codependency model I was referring to, but you're correct. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it would seem that for certain groups, for example, Black African, African American people, and even Latinos, that type of defense mechanism or others often become a critical tool, because often parents are not versed in racism and its impact, and then the schools don't tend to care about it. They just want an A or a B in the class. They're not going to sit with the child and explain, you know, the bigotry and obvious racism we see in many of the lesson plans and in teachers. So it's almost a natural position that many people take. In other words, to survive this stuff, either I'm going to fight, quit, do drugs, or use humor or something else to maneuver through the system, you know, when possible. Because that's what I did. My parents, you know, they loved me, but they were too busy going to a certain church to invest time in me. And
right.
I had to find my own way to maneuver, study on my own, became a track award winner on my own, a chess winner on my own. Meanwhile, they were in church every Sunday. And I became vilified because I wouldn't convert to their religion.
As right. Oh, don't go ahead.
With academics and sports. And so we, I think in the black community in particular, many parents are clueless and need to put more time into the child as opposed to into the, you know, future visions of a better place. That place for the child
right.
is right now, showing nurturing love, looking at homework, working with them on their academics and on their chess
mm-hmm.
or whatever they're into.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, as I was listening, I kind of felt some similar experiences that I've gone through.
Yes, you know, I applaud you for calling in. You're so right. When I was listening to you, I was remembering my own childhood. I was a humorist also.
Yeah.
Kind of for the same reason. You remember the fact they always called
yeah.
me the comedian in the family because I was always had the one-liners at the dinner table.
Yeah.
You know, and
them
again,
up, you know, we learned.
And, mm-hmm. and again, the church experience, same thing. I would say to myself, I was a very intelligent child, and I would say to myself, why are they acting like this in this church? Why are they acting like this? You know, this is just they take this seriously, and never affected me seriously. I always thought of it as a place of entertainment, but I never understood why they took it so seriously, and they didn't like that I didn't
yeah.
take it seriously.
Yeah. I used to run around up to the front and raise my hands, and when I was about 5 through 8, I was really rambunctious, and they thought I was a bad child. I just did, you know. I really figured, what's wrong with you people? This is all a performance. Let me get in on this. Cut me a check at the same time.
As a matter of fact, with me, I would just laugh at them. They'll fall out. And I'll crack up, you know. My mother said, stop laughing at those people. They're serious.
Yeah.
I would just laugh. So I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. But amazingly, they think we're the crazy ones. I have a relative that called me, and guess what? He said to me, listen, cuz, he said, my brother is crazy. I never met his brother. So I'm thinking he's
okay.
going to say his brother, you know, ran around naked and robbed the bank in a chicken suit.
Yeah.
Guess what he said?
Yeah.
My brother doesn't believe in the God from my religion. And I said,
oh my.
Are you telling me you're saying your brother is crazy because he doesn't believe in, you know, the name of your God? He said, yeah, he's crazy.
Right.
It's amazing.
Oh my.
Not,
oh my.
I'm not saying that the... Yeah, you know, I'm not suggesting that for all religions, the name of their God is necessarily, may not have an etymology that makes sense, and they may be able to prove certain things. But what I'm saying is that people shouldn't be called crazy just because they don't believe in another person's version of the God, which was generally taken from Babylon and Egypt and
right.
Nubia. You know,
right,
if they
right.
want to talk about crazy, then do some research and learn more about
right.
the truth. And the funny thing is, we're not the ones that push the matter. It's the
right.
very the zealots that push it. I mind my business. If you don't bring up religion,
right.
I leave it alone.
Right.
And then when they bring it up and
right.
you start dropping some knowledge on them, they say, oh, you crazy. You're being difficult.
Right.
Well, I didn't start the fight. If you're not intelligent, then don't say nothing.
Right, right.
Yeah,
I've been
it's
so many
a,
times, and they wonder why you take a position. So, like, I didn't start this. You did. I didn't start this.
I know. Yeah, yeah. Don't start nothing, won't be nothing.
Won't be nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so correct.
And that's one of our big challenges in the black and African community, being able to distinguish and separate between our spiritual and religious lives and the
yes.
reality of economic empowerment, police brutality, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And we're typically unable to do that. We put too much
mm-hmm.
stock and faith in the sky gods or God, which may be,
yeah.
you know, in a year or a million years coming. But for now, it seems pretty obvious to me that we're on our own. Trayvon Martin, you know, Haiti.
Yeah, please.
There doesn't
please.
Seem to be... Yeah, anything coming right now, which is cool with me,
right.
but we got to work together and put the differences on the side.
Of course,
and
of course.
And until then, keep cracking the jokes, you know, to get through.
Right. Yeah, and that's why this show is very important to understand, you know, where things start, you know, and why we wonder how come the children wind up being, you know, as they are, is because you are the way you are, you know, think about it. We have to address not only the physical needs, but the spiritual and emotional needs of the child, you see?
Yeah.
And the parents, they aren't doing that. They aren't doing it. They say, well, just obey me, go to my church, and agree with me, and you'll be fine. I don't think so.
Yeah, that's not. Well, for some kids it works, you know, but for kids that are really intuitive and a bit above average intellectually, it doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
And this is why the title of my series is called Conscious Parenting and Personal Growth. You know, anybody can just, you know, be a father, a mother, you know. But hold it. If you're a conscious parent, that means, first of all, you got to be conscious of yourself. You got to be in tune with the Creator yourself, know what's healthy, and know that you don't possess anything. You don't possess the child. You don't own the child. You're there to be a model and mentor and a manager, you see, and help the child become independent thinking themselves, you see?
Yeah. And their future use, meaning that each of our children is an extension of us in the future. And if we do the right thing, like I have one pulling me now, the baby boy, then we become better and stronger in the future. And when we're to the last years of our physical time on the earth, we know that, hey, I've done a great job. This child knows, you know, Kemetic history or Yoruba, or they understand how the Ethiopian, you know, civilization works, or how Europe was able to conquer so many regions, and that Europeans are basically our children, and there's no need for racism because we're all one family and we're all Homo sapiens sapien, you know. And of course, they know computers, because if not, they'll be in tough shape later. So
you're right. Yeah. You're right. But see, what you say, man, is a mouthful, and most, a vast majority, don't have a clue of what you just said. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's that.
But that's why we're doing shows like this. They're making us more conscious. As you know, we've been cut off. You know, we've been cut off from our history and cut off from our own selves, and we don't know ourselves. We don't know where we really came from. We don't have any idea about even separating spirituality from religion. A lot of us don't even know that. You see?
And so
this is why we're doing programs like this, and so we can, you know, bring the consciousness back to the human being so they can realize that they're a spiritual being here, you know, having a human experience, and we are to help all those around us and really pass this on to our children so they become independent thinkers on their own, okay?
Yeah.
They can do that. Yeah. And a mother who is healthy does that. A mother has the attributes of God to that child and tells the child, this is where this really comes from. I'm here to help you along. You see, I'm going to help you, you know, become potty trained. I'm going to help you to walk. I'm going to help you to talk. Help you to learn as much as you can. I'm going to help you to learn how to help yourself in the world. Your father is here to help you all to do what he does. And together, we're going to, as a team, we're going to help you become independent thinker, and then you can be productive and take care of yourself and take care of somebody else, you see? And healthy parents had this in their mind in the beginning. You see?
Yeah. Not after the fact.
Yes. That's say, what if 15 we're going to start parenting this child? No.
And when the critical years are from birth to about 6 years of age.
Yes. And they're so wondering why when the kid is a teenager, and then they want to they say, oh, now we'll start parenting. The child is mad at you, and the child is right.
Our community in particular, I keep saying it, and some adults get angry. We are failing our children, and at alarming rates. Even parents with, you know, 10 master's degrees and 5 homes, the children, when they get older, don't have much to do with the parents. They don't want to continue in the business, or even if they go outside the business, they could still reach out, and we need to invest. So I homeschool, and I gave up, you know, Wall Street and other lucrative income streams to invest in my billion-dollar children so that, you know, as I get older, I know that, you know, that's the big payoff, not the cars and traveling to Hawaii every other week, but having wonderful children that understand their role in our system and how they can change it and when to compromise, because that's a, you know, critical thing we need to do also.
Oh, my God. Brother, you are a rare soul. What was your name again, man?
I'm Hotep Kenyatta.
Hotep? Alhamdulillah. Yeah. You know, it's, you're a rare soul. I think this is fantastic. I'm so glad you called. I'm trying to get folks to be somewhere near your mindset now. You know?
Well, keep my number, brother. By the way, I'm older than I sound, so I'm getting way out there.
Well, we've all been on Earth several decades now, but I'm telling you, man. See, a lot of times we can have the age on us, but still not the wisdom.
That's true.
And it's very important for us to understand that. Really, typically at 40, you're supposed to be at that point of wisdom. That's typically the age there, and a lot of us don't even understand that. But at 40, it starts there, and that's by the time you got you live, you have experiences, relationship experiences, mm-hmm. occupational experiences, life experiences. So you're kind of at the top of the mountain, and you can kind of see where things are going. You really know about cause and effect really, real easily, real sharply at that age, you know. And so mm-hmm. you know how to take care of yourself and how to tell others to take care of themselves. And so mm-hmm. very important to understand knowing our history, knowing a little bit about relationships, and knowing just how important it is to stay connected to God, you see, connected, and be connected to our young ones that are coming through. The problem with the kids, yeah, I see, is that we're disconnected because we never were connected to them in the first place. You know, you got to be connected to that boy, connected to that girl, you see, and so we don't just teach them as if you're a parent on a pedestal. We have to realize we're common spirits here. We all came from the same place, going back to the same place here, you know, and we're helping one another out. And so we got to get that. We got to stop this pedestal kind of thing where I'm the big parent, you're the small child, and you can never come close to me because I'm the big parent. No, stop it.
Yeah.
That's not healthy. You know, so I appreciate you, brother, for coming on like this. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah,
so
thank you.
Please.
Two quick things. One would be, be great if our people – I'm sorry, my son, he's in my arms. He's talking.
I love it. Go ahead.
He has autism. We work with him. He's trying to talk on the radio. If we as people come together, even with our religious backgrounds or atheist backgrounds, okay, sir, and talk things through, discuss history, discuss the fact that Arabia actually, before the Saudi family took over, it was Arabia, but before that, actually, lots of African influence was occurring, and that is something that's very intriguing as we look back at around 700 AD, which is, you know, 2015 minus 700, there was a change with Ham when both the Muslim sect and the Christian decided that Ham was the creator of progenitor of black people, which was a misinterpretation of the Jewish Torah. From that point on, racism became a huge factor, from the Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand to Manifest Destiny, etc. And that's something that, you know, many, many groups could start to look at, hopefully, and evaluate. But the second thing I want to say is that I really think that each human is that powerful being that creates galaxies, because inside of us are galaxies, cells that become, you know, various organs depending on the structures. And I think that we are each really the power, not maybe the ultimate power, because the galaxy is bigger than ours, but each of us, I think of my children as like powerful angels that create, not in the religious sense, but in a metaphysical sense. And that's kind of how we live our lives. You know?
Yes. Yes, absolutely, man. And I would tell you, brother, when I started, even though you called in late, when I started the program, I was telling folks that what I'm doing on this series is actually reading a song from my book called Reconnected. Can you hear that? Reconnected. And that's my book. So I would really encourage you, if you can, to go to my site. It's called cloudsofabundance.com and get the book, Reconnected. And because that's the book I'm actually talking from. And in the chapter
Clouds of Abundance. Yeah, sorry, I'll check that up.
By the way, I'm in the process
of editing also, for some clients.
Oh, good. Go to cloudsofabundance.com. And please see, now you get the book and you'll say, yes, you'll say a big yes, because everything you're saying, I have that in the book, and we're on the same page, brother. So I appreciate you for sure.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, and we'll split publishing.
And there you go. Hey, we can tell you what you just go to the website and you'll see my my video there in my show. So I appreciate you. And my brother, keep doing
thank you, brother.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you. Stay strong.
Okay. All right. And you can call back anytime. He's on mute.
Thank
okay.
You.
Here you go. Back on mute. All right. Fantastic. Okay, I muted it, brother. And brother, in case you want to call, if you want to talk again, you have to call back in because I can't put you back on. It's impossible to hit one again, so you have to hang up and call back if you want to say something else. But, hey, I appreciate Brother Hotel for saying something and contributing to the show. Fantastic. That's what I'm talking about. And that's what we need to have more of, interactions. Now, I'm doing this series here. I love to hear interactions from you out there, okay? Because now that brother gave me an inspiration. See, even though, you know, I've talked to many people about the subjects, you know, a lot of times I'm talking to the airwaves, and it goes all over the world, but I don't get enough feedback. So I really appreciate Brother Hotep, giving me his inspiration, his energy. And so all you didn't hear the first part, again, the book is called Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self by going to www.cloudsofabundance.com, cloudsofabundance.com. My email, nrbookclub@gmail.com, nrbookclub@gmail.com. All right, fantastic. We're talking about codependency as it relates to parenting and personal growth. And I'll give you the family model, kind of make up a family model so you can understand how different parts of the family roles you make up your life and dictate how you're going to be as a young one and also as a adult. Okay, I was talking about this girl named Heather. I kind of made a little fictional character. She was a scapegoat. She used humor to replace some of her bad feelings that she was having inside. Okay, and going with her, story. I'm saying that her boyfriend never took her seriously. They disrespected her and cheated on her. This is Heather now. She tried to laugh it off, as they always blamed her for the relationship problem, saying that her mouth was too busy and didn't know when to be quiet. Well, she was used to that growing up. Remember, she came from a dysfunctional family. They blamed her all the time. Some of her boyfriends were alcoholics, and one was a drug dealer. For some reason, she just couldn't figure out why her relationships were not working out. The scapegoat is normally the more sensitive one, getting her easily and very much wants to please for the reassurance that she loved. She loved having sex with the various boys in her life. She later on was a good, obedient wife, not being too loud, or so she thought, using humor to bring civility to the house, and still she had failed relationships. Her older sister, Susie, remember I talked about her, warned her about these boys she was with in her unrestrained mouth, but that didn't matter. She told Susie that this one would be different. It wouldn't be like the last one. When she looks in the mirror, she is troubled at what she sees. She has thoughts of destroying herself as she hates what she has grown to become. Okay? Now, that's the scapegoat role, okay? Now we're to Tyrone, all right? Now, Tyrone is a baby and has a completely different set of survival skills. He takes on the counter-dependent personality. Hear that? Counter-dependent personality. Now, counter-dependent personalities are the ones who try to be in control by pretending they don't need anybody in their lives. Hear this, please. They are isolative, very observant, rather than being flighty or energetic, displaying nervous energy and getting in trouble behind their high emotional behaviors. They take careful notes of what the parents are and not doing. They are very serious-minded, sensitive, and hold grudges. Tyrone always stands out, and he is content being by himself and not running around with other kids. He pays close attention to dad as he comes home, interacts with the family and the way he does. Yeah, neglects his home and family responsibilities, gets drunk, berates mom, and starts the negative cycle the next day. In his mind, he says to himself, I will never be like Dad. Damn Dad. I hate Dad. One day I'm going to let him know how I really feel and see how he takes it. I'll show him what he did to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in his teenage years, he makes sure he excels in class, getting accolades from teachers. He keeps a couple of old buddies around that he feels comfortable with, but no girlfriends or any overt interest in girls. There was one assignment in school where, in his life skill class, he was asked to describe his household and the roles everyone played. That was a trigger point for him as he refused to participate. His teacher asked him what the problem was, and he remarked angrily, I will not discuss anything regarding my father. I have nothing to do with him. I want nothing from him. I don't regard him as my father, just a person that comes and goes. I have no feelings for him. You don't know what he has done. I absolutely refuse to talk about him to you or anybody else. I won't talk about my household either. They do their thing, I do mine. That's as far as I'm going to say. Don't ask me anymore about it. I can't stand that man. Whew. End quote. As he is talking, his eyes widen, pupils become dilated, his heart races, and he appears nervous and enraged. It is very obvious he is very angry and has been affected very deeply by his household dynamics. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. He likes playing video games and says that he will create video games one day and market them. He asked his mother for a petition to be emancipated before his 18th birthday and did not want anyone in the family to come to his graduation. You see, as he enters his adulthood, he is still isolative and consoles himself with computer-related activities. He becomes a computer engineer. Later starts his own company. Makes good money. He runs it pretty much all by himself as his relationship skills are not the best. So coworkers didn't last long, nor the few girlfriends he managed to get. He figures that as long as his anger buttons aren't pushed, he will do just fine all by himself. Okay? All right. That's Tyrone with the dysfunctional role of being the counter-dependent. Okay? Now, when investigating Susie's case, seeing what her mother went through, she wanted to overachieve. That was her way of correcting her dysfunctional upbringing. See, her mother wasn't doing much for herself, so Susie was going to compensate by doing a lot. She unfortunately inherited her mother's low self-esteem and attracted brutal men into her life. She used her overachieving as a smokescreen for her low self-esteem and thinking that her achievements would attract the right man into her life. All right, I'm analyzing the few I just talked about. Roberto didn't like the way his mother was treated, so he swore to never abuse or be mean to a woman. So what did he do? He went the other way entirely. He became a welcome doormat in his relationships. Yeah, his girlfriends and wife all ruled completely over him and his affairs. He called himself compensating for his dysfunctional upbringing, growing up to become an alcoholic doormat. He also had a void in his self-esteem department. Now, Heather, now in her own way, Heather tried to compensate by using humor and her willingness to please to get the attention that she wanted. She witnessed her mother not fulfilling any dreams of her own, so she was going to go places. Oh, yeah. She was going to have an overbubbly personality and be a crowd pleaser with her humorous, joking ways. That, she thought, was going to be her ticket to freedom. Mm-hmm. Now back to Tyrone. Tyrone went to the opposite direction with his counter-dependent personality. His way of compensation was to shut down or shut out any influence of his father's spirit and to pretend to be born into a different family altogether. He, like classic counter-dependence, felt like he was so wounded and betrayed in childhood that in order to survive, he had to convince himself that he didn't need other people. He felt and believed that it is never safe to get close to others. All right? Common thread In all these cases is the presence of low self-esteem and low self-worth. Since the family standards were all low, the only choice they as children in these families had was to internalize and accept low, quote-unquote low, as being normal. This brings to mind a couple of previously mentioned sayings. We are all products of our environment. The fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. We have all heard these quotes, and unfortunately, they are quite true. This is a very important point, I'm telling you. We have to realize that it is not our fault that our relationships have not worked out. We're set up to fail in relationships by the unhealthy environments we grew up in, by the dysfunctional and dishonest definitions and role modeling that we experienced. Follow that? Oh, it's so important. So important to understand this. Man. All right. Another quote by Robert Burney. I quoted him before. I like Robert Burney. I study him quite a bit. He says, both the classic counterdependent and codependent patterns are reactive codependent traits that are out of balance and dysfunctional. We do need other people, but to allow our self-worth to be determined in reaction to other people is giving power away and setting ourselves up to be victims. It is very important to own that we have worth as the unique, special being that each of us is not dependent on how other people react to us, end quote. Yeah, isn't that something? We got it. I'm telling you, you have to understand this. Conscious parenting, personal growth, that's what this series is all about. You got to do that. I see too many times with these parents, especially the mothers, you know, when they love their sons, you know, a whole lot. Then when the sons get older, they do not want the son to leave the house. They have a special bedroom for them. It's always their room. You see, they want to keep them as a child. And when they might have, falls or, you know, they'll fall down in life to come back home. Oh, yeah, you can always come back here. This is your home, son. This is your home. And they feel like the owner possessed them. And it's very unhealthy, very unhealthy. When they get in relationships, you know, the mother has to be consulted all the time. It's an unhealthy relationship like that. Unhealthy, unhealthy. I see a lot of them like that. You know, and sometimes the sons go along with it. You know? And what is this? She's codependent. Yeah, that's codependency right there. You know, and this is a very difficult pill to swallow for codependents, for they feel they are defined by how others think of them and of being people pleasers and martyrs. For the classic codependent, their self-esteem lies entirely on and in the other person. Hear that, please. It causes them to forget about getting their needs met, and to not be aware that it is right to have needs. The process of owning self is frustrating and confusing. See, the concept of having boundaries is foreign. Yeah, this is important. See, the fear of abandonment, gotta talk about that, is another common thread that is dominant in the classic codependent and counterdependent mind. See, the counterdependent experienced a level of abandonment as a child, and as a survival technique for theirs, chose to shut people out so they can't abandon him again. The codependent experienced abandonment, so they choose to cling on to their relationship partners with their enabling ways so they won't be hurt again. Both these ways are dysfunctional and dishonest. I'm telling you, I'm going to put a pause right there. very important to understand that. Okay, as a wrap-up, I'm Nazim Rashid, author of the book Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. And in this series and all the other series I've conducted on this network, I've been reading and expounding from the different personal growth aspects of the book as it relates to the topic at hand. Right now it's conscious parenting and personal growth. And I'm talking about codependency right now and attachments. So I beg everybody, please go to www.cloudsofabundance.com, and you can email me, let me know some feedback you've experienced from this program and in your own lives, you know, nrbookclub@gmail.com, nrbookclub@gmail.com. All right? And I thank Imam Alfred Muhammad for giving me this slot on his Religion Means the Lives show every Wednesday. And our times are varied, but you know, it's supposed to be 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, but it looks like it's more like 6:30 Eastern Standard Time. So please tune in if you want to hear the live show. Most Mondays I'm here doing this. All right. And like my show, I have my show called The Reconnected Show on the same network on Saturdays at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And you can call 994-347-2524. Yeah, 994-347-2524. I believe that's correct. Hope that's correct. Okay. And URL, the website is, you know, like this one, blogtalkradio.com/reconnected. Okay? blogtalkradio.com/reconnected. And you can hear my show there. I'm a host there, so I don't talk a lot. I introduce the guests, and then we go from there. And this week, we're actually talking about self-esteem this week. We're a guest from Germany. We'll be on this week. Okay? Self-esteem is the topic at hand. So I invite you to hear that show also. Okay, with that, I invite everybody to tune in. And if you want to be on the mailing list so you can know about the shows coming up ahead of time, my show promo email list, go to nrbookclub@gmail.com, and I'll put you on the email list there so you'll know automatically every week what's going on with me. Okay? Fantastic. So with that, I'm going to close the show out as I started. Only God has be with you. All right? Assalamu alaikum.